Good to see everyone here. We are making some last-minute adjustments to the presentation size of the slides, and almost through with that, but we can go ahead and, I think, get started. So, Billy, if you'll make your way to the front. I only know to say Billy's name is Billy Sudhir, and I may be wrong about that, and I'll let him correct whatever that needs to be. Representative of the Lord in India, and he's going to make his presentation here. Billy, there's about 45 minutes, so I don't know how far we get through all the slides you have,
sir.
But we'll see what the Lord provides.
Yes, sir.
Does he need to be up high?
He's wireless mic, so he's good.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, good evening. I want to thank the elders for giving me this opportunity, and also for letting me come here and be able to talk about the work that I'm doing. As you all know, I'm from India, and yes, Indians, many of you are aware that India is famous for two things. One is for spice, which I don't eat, and two is technology, tech guys, which I'm pretty bad at. So I don't suit the bill of being an Indian, but nevertheless, I just want to put it up there. I'm blessed to be able to serving the Lord in India, and that is what I'm going to talk about, India evangelism. And India, as you know, is very diversified, but at the same time, it is very well known for idolatry, and the forms of idolatry are pretty, I don't know the right term, but they're pretty bad when you see. Before I start, there are a couple of images that are graphic, so I'll quickly breeze through them when they are. And also, I want to know that whatever we are doing, whatever I'm trying to show here, when things are unable to explain, it's just because of the lack of time. But I'll be pretty open to any questions that you might have. And also, anything that we are doing in the mission field in India is we are bound to go by the scripture, and whatever we do, we are trying our best to do it with scriptural authority, and that's our primary intention and our primary focus which has always been. So I'm going to move on quickly, and as you know, the cow is a very holy animal in India, and they don't only worship it, they do a lot of crazy things with it. So just want to, so there you go. Just a quick info about India. 29 states in India, 23 official languages, 113 other languages spoken, and we got about 400 dialects that are recognized, and there are another 200 more dialects that are not recognized, but people do still speak about them. Speak them. There are about 1.65 billion people in India. 1.65. Six major religions. Hinduism, which is the biggest religion, that's about 80.5%. Muslims and Sikhs. Then you have Christianity, as they call it, is 1.9, then followed by Jainism. But if you're really looking for Christians, New Testament Christians, 0.2%, and even less. And that's where I come from. That's the India map, and that's the area where I come from. That's Kakinada. I live by the coast, so that's the bay there. I come from a state called Andhra Pradesh. The town that I come from is in a county called East Godavari. I come from a small town, and we have about 6 million people living in there. So it is still small, so but we got a lot of people living in there. So that's the bay there. I live by the coast. And as you know, very famous for Hindu religion. And I just last night I discovered that there are 330 million people in the U.S. Now guess how many gods they have, Hindus have? 330 million gods. That's 330 million gods. They worship almost everything. Right from stone, water, air, duck, crab, pig, anything. So they got about 300, and that's one of the famous goddess in India that whose festival is going right now as we speak. That festival lasts for 9 days. And that's not only it. They bring God to people just like, you know, we try to preach them that Jesus came to for people to seek the lost, to seek and save the lost. And in the same manner, they try to bring their idol once a year out to the people. So just they say that God is seeing how his people are. So they are carried on. He's carried on his shoulder, on people's shoulders, and they go around every town. And just a quick facts of today, 86% of the world's population do not personally know a Christian. They have almost one-third of the world have never had a chance to hear the gospel. And in India, 72 women and children were sold into slavery, 237 people died of HIV, 869 of hunger, 1,250 of preventable disease. But this is something that I wanted to highlight. Out of world 16,000 people groups, 14,000 are still unreached. These are real numbers taken from real statistics. Great Commission. Jesus, when he, before he ascended to heaven, gave the Great Commission, Matthew 28, verse 18 to 20. And that's what we do. In India, we are, the fields are very white. There are people in India who are always willing to hear about God. If you are talking about God, you will have an audience. And that's not in tens, that's not in twenties. You will have them by the hundreds. But there are very few people who are willing to take the gospel. Because there are not many. The laborers are very few. So what I do as part of my work is I teach young men from the age group of 18 to 27. I teach them to go into various areas and work. And there are hundreds who are interested to learn about the Bible and to go into different areas. And the areas which we are going to see later on are really rough. They are very uncivilized. They are very underdeveloped. But these men are taught the Bible. They prepared themselves. And then they go. This we call it a missions program. It is, we don't want to institutionalize that. So we are calling it a program, a missions program, which is just to train up, equip young men to go out and preach the gospel. And they go out, go from house to house, just like we see the early Christians in the first century. They went from city to city, house to house. So they go from house to house, teaching about Christ, taking the gospel. And that's how, whenever there is someone talking about God, in any village, in any tribe, that's the number that you get. And then there are a lot of people who respond. There are a lot of people who obey the gospel. So we baptize them. And it doesn't really matter whether we are baptizing them in a canal, in a drain, or sometimes we also baptize them in a sewer. But people are willing to be baptized. And then these young men, wherever they are preaching the gospel, wherever they are baptizing, there starts the church. The church begins to meet. And sometimes it's out in the open. Most of the time it's out in the open. 95% it's out in the open, under a tree, or by the wayside. And sometimes, as you see over there, if people are rich enough, wealthy enough, they have a thatched place to worship. And they worship there. And so far, the young men who have gone out to preach the gospel, we have, with the help of such young men, we have been able to start up nearly 32 new congregations where the Lord's church meet and break bread on a Sunday morning. 32. Over the last 5 years. That's a great accomplishment that the boys, the students, the young men have done. And also at the same time, there is a challenge. Since the young men work in deep parts of the village, in interior parts of the country, where livelihood is income is very limited. People work from 6 in the morning till 6 at night just to earn $2 a day. And if on a Sunday to worship, many people skip work, so they skip a meal. To attend worship, they skip a meal. And so it's hard for most of these preachers to survive. Because there isn't anything available, and that's the challenge that we are facing. And recently, a classic example is this young man who studied the Bible for 1 year, a very bright student. He stayed with us. My mom cooks for all these young man, and he stayed with us, he was very good, went out, started up a very good congregation, then he started up another one, going on pretty well, but just a dog, a stray dog, you know, scraped one of its teeth on his toe. And he could not afford a vaccination. And he died of rabies. That's the most terrible thing to see, especially for a guy who stayed with us for 1 year. So please, the reason why I put this picture up is I want you to remember him in your prayers. So please pray for him and his family. Another part of the work that I also do is I preach for a colony of brethren affected with leprosy. And I want to be very careful when I use the term. I just want to quickly breeze through that. There are brethren who are affected with leprosy. I'm not so keen on calling them lepers because they are, at the end of the day, they are our brethren. So these brethren, they're affected with leprosy. But leprosy in India, as in the biblical times, is still considered to be a cursed disease. Nobody wants to do anything with them. They are not allowed to be seen to the public. They're not allowed to get on public transport. They're not allowed to go on to any hospitals for any treatment. India has contained, they claims that India has contained leprosy. And for the fact, the brethren do not have the right to vote. So according to the government, they don't exist. And there are 500,000 of lepers in India, out of which for the colony where the brethren meet, whom my father has taught the gospel and baptized 300 of them, there are now 50 brethren surviving, alive. But they are really faithful. They're faithful brethren. They don't have anything to eat. They beg on the streets to eat. The days they have a living, the days when someone is generous enough to give them something to eat, they eat. Else, they don't eat. But their faith remains strong, and they have the most beautiful voices to praise God. They sing in this very beautiful way when they're praising God. And they don't have hands, but their hearts are always praising God. And when there is anyone who is kind enough, generous enough to give them a meal, we provide them with a meal, and they all eat together, and that's me and my wife there. And sometimes, even when they have food in front of them, they still cannot eat because they don't have fingers to eat. If you can, most of the brethren, they can't eat because they can't hold a spoon or they can't hold the food. And some of the brethren do not have their hands, so you can really imagine them lying on the ground and having their face in a bowl just to eat. That's when they have food. When they don't have it, they don't eat. The only way that a leper dies in India is one, out of starvation, and two, out of infection. Infection is because they don't feel the pain, and leprosy is a disease that eats the bone. So, since no doctors are available, they perform surgeries on themselves, by themselves. So they cut the part of the body and they just dress it up, and eventually, as we all know, it turns out to be an infection and gangrene, and they die. That's the place that I preach for at the leper colony. And another part of the work that I do is caring for the children of lepers. Because when the brethren have children, and the child stays long enough with their parents, is prone to contract the disease of the parents. Leprosy is a disease that is acquired with the contact of blood, when there is contact of blood. And till a child is 3 years old, a child has the immunity to cope up with any disease. But after 3 years old, they don't have that much of immunity. And if there is a wound or a scrape on his skin, and if the father or mother just rubs it off, when there is contact, they get leprosy. And we have seen many children, little children, getting leprosy. So the best way to do it is to keep the kids a little away from their parents so that they do not get the disease of their parents. So that's how eventually a facility was started to have the leper, to have the children of lepers. Now we have the children of lepers, and we also have many other children who are in need, especially children like those. Those are pictures that are taken live. And boys working in places, children in India. It's because of the endless poverty, victims of mafia, the begging mafia. I don't know how many of you have watched a movie called The Slumdog Millionaire, but if you didn't, I would recommend you to watch it. I would suggest you to watch it, because 10% of what happens in India is shown in that movie. What a begging mafia is, actually. Begging mafia is a very terrible thing. I don't have much time, so I'm going to have to quickly go with it. But I'll just give you an outline of what the begging mafia does. Begging mafia takes up children with a promise to the parents, sometimes, that they're going to take their children, employ them in big cities, and send them money over. And then they take the children, they make them blind, cut their limbs, put them in a traffic corner where there are tourists, Westerners traveling, so people are compelled to give them money. And Once the boy grows up to between 10, 15 years old, they're made to sell him drugs. And once he starts taking more drugs, they overdose him and take away the kidneys and the liver and other things. And by the time the boy is 15 years old, he's dead. And for the girls, they induce hormonal injections. So that's a part of the begging mafia. But there are other dark sides of the begging mafia too. So there are kids from begging mafia, there are kids of brethren, there are kids of living off the streets, kids living in Hindu crematoriums, burning dead bodies. So we got some kids there. So these kids are provided 3 meals a day. They are provided with education. And more importantly, they are raised in the fear and understanding of the Lord. These kids, the kids over here, they have all memorized Psalm 119. And they can quote all the 176 verses at the drop of a hat without even a bit of help. And I'm proud to say that my kids have memorized 43 Psalms and 217 memory verses. I tried and I failed. That's how they eat. They're thankful for everything that they receive, and that's where they have all their belongings, in that box. 2 pairs of clothes, their Bible, their notebooks, and that's it. And that's how they sleep. You never know when this guy would end up being there at night. So sometimes they roll over, so it's hard to find, but that's how they sleep. And they have a morning devotion and an evening devotion. And the kids become Christians. So far from this facility, we have, I was talking to Philip and Esther last night, and I was just saying that so far from the children's home, we have produced 47 preachers. We are three short to brag 50. 47 preachers from this home. They obey the gospel. Girls, well, since I travel a lot, visiting other congregations, I find a nice Christian boy, get them married, which is the normal way to do in India. So, and they continue to serve in that, for that local church there, wherever they're meeting. Another part of the work that I do, I also do, is tribal evangelism. Tribals in India, there are 15 million tribals in the area that I visit. And these tribals, there are some tribes who have, let me rephrase that, there are some tribes in the interior parts of the area who still haven't seen an electric bulb or a telephone. There is no medication available for them. There is no drinking water. There's nothing available, and they live in extreme, in the practices of extreme idolatry, where they still practice child and virgin sacrifices. And that's what every village has a prophetess, as they call. And that's, it was hard for me to get that picture, but I still managed to get it. And she was really serious about it. That's the places, and oh, let me just go back. Okay. So, I, as you know, in the U.S., it's illegal to travel in a car of more than 5 passengers. Take a guess of how many on that Jeep. I counted 32. That's the only mode of transportation. And not just that. And that happens to only places where there is a way to go. In other places that we go, we walk miles, 10 miles, 8 miles. The young men who learn to teach the Bible, who train up, they walk miles. And in tribals, they count distance by mountains. If you're saying, oh, I want to go there, oh, that's like 3 mountains away. 3 mountains, you'll get like climb up, climb down, climb up and climb down. So it's like really, really hard. So most of these young preachers, they end up at an age 30, they end up having teared ligaments because of excessive walking, and that's the roads that we travel on to take the gospel. And that's how people are carried. That's a pregnant woman that's being carried to the doctor. And that's where they collect water, and it's in the rain. In the wet season is where they collect water and they store it for the summer. Because there is no water, drinking water facility there. So, that's the kind, and in the wet season, it's extremely hard to go, and especially in those roads, in roads like these, it's extremely hard. They get really slippery. So we travel on donkeys. I don't know how Jesus managed to travel on a donkey, but trust me, that's the most craziest animal I ever got on. I was not able to control it. And it was really hard. But that's the transportation that we use to go into those areas. And that's where, once the gospel is taken, people respond, and that's the number. And that's like a forest. It's not like a party. It's in the middle of a jungle where they are meeting on a Sunday. That's the number of people who attend. Whenever there is someone preaching the gospel. And that's the size of the church building. See that one? If they manage to have a church building. And that's about the maximum would be 12 by 12. And that quickly fills, so people sit outside in the hot sun once this one is full. And that's the places where people meet under the trees. And then we baptize them. And most of the interesting things happen during baptisms. And I would not want to say interesting things, but this is something that I wanted to share with you. Just about last month when I was, before I came here, you know, I was preaching and gave the invitation. A young lady responded, and then we had to find water. So we found water. It was almost a canal / sewer. So I normally encourage the local preacher there to baptize her because they can be in touch with each other. So the preacher got into the water, and she got into the water, and he put her down in the water. So the usual way that in India normally we do is we take these two hands, cover the nostrils and put them down and bring them up. So the preacher, she was a pretty relatively thin lady, so we put her down, he put her down, and he couldn't lift her up. So she was like, her legs were like, you know, literally, and she was literally beating for life. So we were screaming from the shore like, raise her up, lift her up. So the preacher gathered all his strength to lift her up, and guess what happened? Well, she went down this way. There was a dead body that was floating, so one of the hand got in here, stuck in here. So the preacher actually had lifted two people. So, but eventually, though it's a little funny, but she was baptized, and the only way that we could bring her out of the trauma was, I told her that it was her past that was dead there, now she's a new creation, so. So we baptize them in whatever water we find. And then I also teach young men. In India, there is no preacher training facility as such where they could go to a proper preaching school. And we did not want to, like I said, we wanted to call it a preacher's boot camp. I realized that we could use the term boot camp after I came here. But I named it a program, so it still continued to be a program. So we train up these young men who have no knowledge of the Bible. There are many denominational preachers, as they call themselves, who do not know anything about the Bible. They just pick up bits and pieces from places, from groups they go to, and they start bringing those practices into the places that they preach in. So I try to teach them, and these are the perks that you have when you're traveling in the tribal areas. That's a cobra. And I heard that in Texas, you need guns to kill snakes. I killed that with a mic stand. I was preaching in a meeting, and the kids normally, they sit in the front and the parents sit back, and we saw a cobra crawling in. The only way that I could do was take the mic stand and put it on its head. And that's the way it died. And that's a python there. It's very dangerous. The image over there says that it's dangerous to be outside in the tribal area after 6 o'clock because of the threat of wild animals. But if any of the people living there get the news that there is a guy who is preaching the gospel, who is having a meeting there, they literally wait for you to return and stop you and ask you to preach for them. And it doesn't really matter if it's 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, you still get to preach there and tell them about the living God. And sometimes that's the biggest snake that we got to kill. So, not. And another part is Bibles. There are Bibles in India are expensive, and there is a constant need for Bibles in India because that's how people learn about God. That's how they grow. And they try to give Bibles to new converts so that they can read it. And people love to have a copy of the Bible. They just love it. And I'm telling you, that's their most prized possession that they would have. And they just love having a Bible. And I particularly want to talk about this lady. This sister, there was a meeting and I gave an invitation and about 8 people responded. I've got 8 copies of Bibles with me. And she was the only one I felt who could not read, and eventually she does. She cannot read. She's never been to school. So I was giving Bibles to everyone, but somewhere deep down in my heart, I did not want to give her a Bible because I thought that would go for waste. She cannot read. But since she was standing with all of them, I gave her the copy of the Bible, and I told the preacher that, you know, a copy of the Bible was wasted because she's not going to use anything. She's not going to make good use of it. But guess what happened? A couple of weeks after, the preacher calls me. 2 months after, the preacher calls me and he said, "Do you remember that you were pretty much feeling bad to give a lady a Bible?" I said, "Yes." "Now guess what happened?" I said, "What?" So this lady apparently took the Bible, went to this guy and used to ask him to read it out for her. And she used to listen. And during that process, after a couple of days, he asked her whether he could have the copy of the Bible with him for that night so that he could read it. And he read it, continued to read it, and wanted to know more, contacted the preacher. The preacher went there, showed him the scriptures, and guess what? Guess what? Him, his wife, his brother, his mother, his brother's wife, and his mother-in-law. They were all baptized. Just one Bible. And she's the lady. So, you never know. God's word is so powerful that you never know when you experience the most greatest things. And another thing is, I also, like I said, I teach preachers. And they come, I visit them and I teach them about the church, and especially denominational preachers, teach them the truth. So, that during those meetings. And I also preach in gospel meetings. And gospel meetings in India and here are pretty different, because the definition of gospel meeting is different from here and in India. I realized that what I should be calling them here especially is open-air meetings, because people work from 6 in the morning to 6 at night. Then they come home, cook, eat. And by the time, if a meeting is scheduled to start at 9 o'clock, it eventually starts at 11. Then you start a sermon at 12. Then you have to preach for an hour and a half. So about 1:30. And then you have people obeying the gospel. Then you need to search for water. And by the time the meeting gets over, it's about 2:30. So, those are the meetings that I preach in. And that's the biggest audience that I preach for. All right. All right, sir. I also want to talk about the persecution in India. Amongst all this, the government is against the gospel. They're pretty threatened with the number of conversions that are happening. People are obeying the gospel. So they're burning down, they're burning Bibles, burning down church buildings. Not just that, they're burning people's houses who are Christians. The burning preachers. And this is the letter that's being generated to the Hindu groups. Extremely heinous ways of targeting Christians, especially trying to mix pesticides in the waters that we use to stop people from obeying the gospel. Nevertheless, there are people hungry for the word, and there are people who are responding to the gospel, and those who respond remain faithful till they die. And the retention rate in India is 90%. 90% remain faithful. So, I just want you to pray about the work that I'm doing. Share it with other brethren and ask them to pray for us. For whatever we are doing, for whatever the Lord is doing in India, and for the souls in India. Please follow, there's a website, and I also have a Facebook. So, since I don't know all of you, I cannot send any friend requests. So feel free to send me friend requests. You can see the updates. I keep posting updates on Facebook. So feel free to send me a friend request, and also support the work that we are doing in India. And that's my family. Once again, thank you so much for your attention. And if you have any questions, I'll be more than free to I'll be more than happy to answer. Once again, thank you so much, and thanks for your time. Thanks for your attention. Apologize for the graphic images that were there, but I had to go through the detail to let you know what we do there. Thank you once again.